Mulder's back and the agents head off on a mission of revelations. Their quest takes them deep into the mountains where they make a momentous discovery.
What they uncover is a series of mythology plot points that become integral to the show moving forward.
This is not happening.
To the Navajo, the Earth and its creatures have great influence over our existence. The stories pass from generation to generation. Help us to understand the reason for our tears of sadness and tears of joy. Animals like the bear, the spider, and the coyote are powerful symbols to our people. When the FBI man Mulder was cured by the holy people, we were reminded of the story of the Gila monster, who symbolizes the healing powers of the medicine man. In this myth, the Gila monster restores a man by taking all his parts and putting them back together. His blood is gathered by ants, his eyes and ears by sun, his mind by talking god and pollen boy. Then lightning and thunder bring the man back to life. At the end of the ceremony, when the FBI man had been healed, we heard the news from other Native Americans in the Northern Plains that a great event had taken place. Like the Navajo, these people have their own stories and myths. One of these stories tells of the white buffalo woman who came down from the heavens and taught the Indians how to lead virtuous lives and how to pray to the Creator. She told the people she would return one day. Then she turned into a white buffalo and ascended into the clouds, never to be seen again. But on this day, when the holy people had given the FBI man a miracle, a white buffalo was born. And every Native American knew, whether he believed the story or not, that this was a powerful omen and that great changes were coming.
Andrew, we are back, sir.
We never left. I've been here this whole
time. Episode 2. We're already into the thick of season 3.
We're halfway done. It's only 4 episodes in this season. It's crazy.
Yeah. Good Lord. But it's season one hell of a season.
Shortest episodes ever. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here we are. Final episode of the three-parter. We are on Paperclip.
It's a long three-parter. I mean, it's an adrenaline fest.
Very much so. Were you expecting any of the twists in this episode coming up here?
Oh, that's a good question. Speaking from like a first view or on the rewatch? Because I suppose I was expecting
them on the rewatch. You're expecting them on the rewatch, yes. but yeah, your first view, how did this one grab you? There's some big revelations here.
There are. I will give it credit. They dump a lot of information on us, which is the best part of the show when it comes to mythology. Like, I feel like you watch this show either for the one-offs and you enjoy the Monsters of the Week and you're like, oh, it's another freaking story arc that I got to sort of sit through before a werewolf comes on. Or you're a mythology junkie and you're literally waiting for the next installment of story. They hold so much back so that when they actually give it to you, it means something. So yeah, and I suppose the big one here is the alien-human hybridization, you know, the idea of that being a thing. Mm-hmm. They deliver in the sense of giving the audience something to chew on.
Yeah, the revelations in this episode are just monumental to the story, but I suppose we'll get to that, right?
We will probably get
to that. We don't want to, yeah.
So this is still written by Chris Carter. He's written all of them.
This one's directed by Robbie Bowman.
Oh, yeah. Another big one.
They didn't bring any...
Didn't bring any people in that they didn't know could not deliver. They knew would deliver. That's another way of saying that.
I think they knew they had something on their hands with these three mythology episodes. And they, you know, they always bring out the heavy hitters for the openers and closers.
Yes. But
they didn't have to continue with it on the third episode. I think there are those mythology episodes where they bring in relatively unknown directors. But in fact, I think
it was rare, though.
There was one in season two that actually had, so it was like he closed it out or he directed one of them. And it was like, wow, I'm surprised they chose someone that
I think that was
we don't know very well.
I think
well,
that was Michael Lang in Ascension. I think that was the...
I was going to say it's that trilogy, but I couldn't remember who the director was. But yeah, I think they bring someone out who's not your typical heavy hitter for the show, but did a great job.
Well, as Larry Mussner reminded us when we were talking to him, these guys are not just directors, they're producers, they're writer-producers. So they have a vision and know how to execute it, which is their strength in this show. They're not hired guns. They have a lot invested in continuing the story in a way that's just satisfying. So I'm not surprised at all that they're being used for these episodes. The only surprise, I suppose, would be who they use. You know, they don't use Kim Manners. You know, he's just producing. But it's clear that, you know, they got to use different people because they're shooting all this stuff at the same time. You know, they can't wait for R.W. Goodwin to be done with the first episode so they can go to the second episode because they just literally don't have enough time to devote to doing
that. They overlap. Yeah.
No, we're so smart.
they're very talented people. Yeah. Each and every one of them. God damn it. Well, how about we start this episode, Andrew?
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. I'm ready.
Yep. Okay.
I'm standing by.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to open with an epic monologue by none other than Albert Hosteen, talking about the Navajo, and to them, the earth and all of its creatures have great influence over our existence. This goes on and on amongst a backdrop of what I would call stock footage of the open desert.
Definitely stock. That was my note right here.
Animals, thunderstorms, essentially everything you might see when you listen to an Enya song. Just given life here. So after the credits, when we ended on the previous episode, Scully had threatened Skinner with her gun, but was then surprised herself when he got the opportunity to draw his weapon and put her off her game. And that's where the episode ended. And that is where we start, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
They've got their guns aimed at each other, yelling at each other to drop their guns, but no one's relenting. And Mulder bursts in to save the day. Of course, his gun is trained on Skinner.
Well, look, it's his apartment, so go figure he's going to break into it.
Yep. I mean, he can't just come in. So he must have been standing out there listening to this.
It's not a very thick door. I think if you were right there, you could parse together what's going
on. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's a tense little Mexican standoff here.
Yes, yes. Skinner is in disbelief. He is under the assumption, or has been under the assumption, that Mulder is in fact dead. So this is catching him completely off guard. Scully is relieved. Her premonition was accurate. She felt he was going to be alive, and here he is. So yay for her. Her heart is aflutter. As the tension mellows, Skinner offers an olive branch and produces the digital tape from his coat, the source of all their issues, Andrew. Mulder briefs Skinner on its contents and threatens him again to give Scully the tape. But Skinner posits this is their chance to bring the bad guys to justice. Mulder allows him to keep the tape while he and Scully begin their new mission. I feel like we need to take a break after that scene because the tension was so high at the last episode, the end of the last episode, and it starts out there, right? How did this resolve for you, Andrew?
To their credit, they found a way out because we like all of these characters. We don't want to see mommy and daddy fighting. Right. So when they manage to find a way out that doesn't involve them shooting each other, that's the success, right? And in a way, you kind of know that. You're like, I don't know how they're going to get out of it, but they're going to get out of it because we just had Melissa get shot. She's probably not coming back for the sequel. Are we really going to have one of these characters get shot?
She comes back, but she's drooling.
Yeah, that's right. Her role has diminished. So it's a tough nut to crack, but they do it well. They do it in a believable way. I have no problem with this scene. Other than maybe it's the Deus Ex Machina of Mulder appearing, but I'm okay with that because it's still a drama at the end of the day. But yeah, it's very satisfying, and it brings it down in a light way. Like when Mulder is the one to take the gun off and say, "All right, we're going to do it this way." I'm okay with this. You know, he trusts mm-hmm. Skinner, obviously. So I liked it. I liked how the scene played out.
And Skinner has finally shown at least some of his colors, right?
That's right.
He would not be coming here. He would not have this tape and be coming to them with anything but he would not be here right now talking to them if he was not on their side, and at least in some capacity. If he wanted to kill them, he could, right?
Yeah, well, part of me wants to ask the question whether or not this was a double gambit that they send Louise Cardinale and Krycek to kill Scully, but they also sent Skinner to intercept Scully to sort of cover all their bases. If we don't get her one way, we'll get her another way. The question would be, did the CSM say to Skinner, you were going to take out Scully? I don't think so, because that is a super audacious move that puts him in great risk. Like, he's not some lackey you go out to have hitting people.
Right.
I don't buy that. So from the beginning, when we had this whole gambit set up of Scully, you know, it's going to be something you trust that's going to, you know, do you in. I never thought it made sense that it was Skinner. I would have been okay with it being some other agent or, frankly, Melissa pulling a gun. You know, I could have been around with
that. And you can't help but think that, right? You're like, Melissa, we just met her. There's no way, right? Could it? Well, maybe.
Yeah.
And obviously,
Mrs. Scully pulling a gun on her daughter. Never liked you. Always
so good to see you, Dana. Come inside.
Have some tea.
And she was never heard from again.
Yeah.
So you're telling me Margaret Scully is the mastermind behind all the stuff in the show?
Well, look, you've never liked her, so
I've never liked her. Goddamn, she plays that role. She's great. Oh man.
All right, that's my take on that. Let's keep
going. No, that's awesome. So from here, we cut to a hospital. There are people everywhere, very busy. Mama Scully comes in distraught, having gotten news about her daughter's shooting. When she inquires about Dana, the doctor actually corrects her to say it's Melissa Scully. And ironically, we were just talking about her for no reason. I want to say that Sheila Larkin plays this scene great. I mean, how do you go from worrying about one daughter to be gut punched that it's your other daughter? And you can see that confusion on her face. Like, wait, what are you telling me? That why would Melissa be shot in the head? And
right.
She doesn't even have a moment to be relieved that her other daughter is okay, because now her other daughter is in danger. What is going on? This poor woman.
It's a marvelous reveal. Because as you say, we've got this moment of where's Dana? You know, she mm-hmm. marches in there going, I know Dana's been in trouble. Where is she? You know, I need to go there and be there for the daughter I know is going to be in trouble. And then when she finds out it's Melissa, it's like, wait, what? And like, this doesn't solve the problem of Dana. It adds by having another problem, which is Melissa. It's a brilliant scene.
Excellent. I will say the doctor is Robert Lewis. We have seen him in Eve and Dwayne Barry.
Yeah,
and I believe this is his final episode, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Mama Scully then visits Melissa, who is in very bad condition. They've induced a coma to help her.
Can I just say, credit to the episode for not going back to one breath material?
Yeah.
Pulling out the big bag that...
Yeah.
I think medical technology has advanced a lot since, you know, the year that was
a year. Yeah. So we cut back to the amazing photo of Mulder's dad and all his buddies. It was taken in 1973. Byers asks if they know about Operation Paperclip, where the government provided safe haven for war criminals of World War II in exchange for their scientific knowledge. One of these men, a made-up Victor Klemper, particularly
evil. Is that real?
No, he is not. Mm. He was particularly evil, and he is in this photo, which is alarming because, Jesus, his dad must be working with him, or must have been working with him.
Dad's got a lot of secrets.
Yeah. He helped us win the space race before the Soviets could. So as the scene ends, Langley informs us that he's alive and well, living off the taxpayers' money. It's here, Andrew, that Frohickey arrives, elated to see his comrade alive and well.
Yeah.
Although this is short-lived, he quickly turns his attention to Scully, and his mood shifts completely. Removing his hat in sorrow, he tells her he's been listening to the scanner and that her sister is in critical condition. Can I just say that I love the removal of the hat?
It's such a good touch, yeah.
It's a good touch. It's corny, but that's Frohickey, right? He's respectful. Yeah. He's corny, horny, but he's respectful.
I don't know, man. Way to join corny and horny in one word? Cahorny?
Cahorny.
Cahorny?
I mean, he's just a sweetheart, right? He really is a respectful person. So, and yeah. he loves Scully, and he removes his hat out of sorrow for her.
Well, this is where I dislike the fact that that is all the lone gunman we're going to get. Their involvement in this episode is to point us to Victor Klemper, and then they exit stage left. Whereas this would, but I know that they need to bring Albert in because they've spent a lot of money on him. That's great that he'll be here. But as for going to visit Melissa Scully in the hospital, who better to send than the lone gunman?
Yeah, that's true. But they don't look like prayers, and I do think she specifically asked him to pray over her sister.
I think he sent him there to be like a bodyguard. Come on, he knows that she's in danger.
He sent him to be a bodyguard. You're not serious, right? Come on, Andrew. An elderly man.
He can take a butt stroke like no one's business.
I like Floyd Red Crow Westerman.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's a bodyguard.
Listen, you didn't see the outtakes where he single-handedly takes out all those soldiers. The sequel to this episode is him exacting revenge on the soldier squad.
You know what?
That turned over his teapot.
There is an outtake with the original script where he is the one who follows the curious man into the stairwell and gets into a fisticuffs with him. Skinner. I think that is you stay here, G-Man.
He knows the guy falls down the wall and Albert gives a one-liner. He's like, take that fatality back to your reservation.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
That's even better.
Oh, man, why didn't he do this? Why could he not have his own show?
And he rides a dirt bike with Eric.
Yes.
I can see the 80s, you know.
A dirt bike with a sidecar. Go that way.
It's called Res Adventures. I think it's...
Destiny is calling, Eric. Let us go.
Oh, I want to see it. I want to see all of it.
They have quirky good deeds to do across the nation.
They're saving lives, changing lives. They're fending off evil. They're delivering cattle. Man.
This is fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, man.
None of that's getting cut.
Why are we reviewing this episode when we can be writing that episode? My God.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
And we haven't even got Albert yet. He's not even...
Albert hosted. He is a hero. I love that man. And this that we have just written for him would have made a blockbuster TV show. That's the real spinoff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not Millennium, not Lone Gunman.
They missed a real opportunity here.
Yeah. Okay, so Scully rushes out. She's distraught. She needs to go see her sister. But Mulder stops her from rushing to the hospital. If they're trying to kill her, that's exactly where they're going to look first. Andrew, before we pass this scene, I do want to point out when she exits stage left from the lone gunman, she exits into a brick stairwell. Mm. I do not believe that for the rest of the show, the lone gunmen are anywhere but on the bottom floor of a warehouse. And they call no attention to it. I think this is the only time. I could be wrong, but I think this is the only time they have a stairwell.
Interesting point. Because I think we have had moments where I'm thinking of, is it season 4? Season 5? No, it's season 5 where they do the CSM backstory.
Season 4. It's Musings of a Cigarette Man. Or Cigarette Smoking Man. And then in season 5, actually, with a kill switch, I think, I'm almost positive there's an outside shot, but maybe not.
I think there is. Like when Froakie leaves, he literally walks straight out and then into a parking lot or something. So
I'm almost positive this is fake. Yeah,
my guess is they move around a lot.
That's fair. I just wanted to call attention to it because I really don't recall them ever having a second story office or whatever you want to call it. I know in the first season when they were supposed to be one-hit wonders, it was like a classroom or something, but but that's excusable. You know, they hadn't been established yet, so.
Well, Mike, I think we should spend another 20 minutes talking about the stairwell.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with it, sir.
I think that you do. I think that we need to investigate why a black stairwell? Why not, like,
because it's a green stairwell? That is a deliberately painted black brick stairwell.
I think that it's found. You know, I think it's literally like, guys, we need to shoot this scene of her running, you know, and then she's going down a stairwell. But it doesn't have to be that. She could run outside. Why does it have to be a stairwell?
Yeah. The next morning, the syndicate is having a meeting regarding Melissa's shooting. The first elder sounds deeply concerned, but then in reality, it's just about exposure. Kind of like the well-manicured man was telling Scully. This is going to draw even more attention because an innocent woman has died. Mm-hmm. And it's here that well-manicured man challenges CSM, who is sitting very calmly smoking his cigarette. He calls his assassins ineffectual. His doubts about CSM's abilities then focuses on the digital tape. He's told them he has the tape, but now well-manicured man isn't so sure. Then things start to turn on CSM. The other elders step in to ask for the tape. Oh boy. He now is required to produce the tape for these men. A tape he does not have.
To the point of... all right. I don't particularly like this scene of them discussing Melissa Scully being shot. I feel like if you're at this level, if you're doing what they're doing, the plots they are hatching across the world, you do not zero down on the shooting of a woman in Midtown Washington. Like, I get that the script wants us to elevate this act as momentous, but I feel like that's a lower management problem. That does not rise to this level unless this is a calculated move on well-manicured man's part to make it an issue. Like, this is yet another way your people are bungling this. You know, why are we listening to you take this course? But I feel like they could have gone directly to the challenge for the tape. I don't think they needed to really explore them discussing the bungling of the assault on Melissa. All it does is to serve to show how that is important, that is an important thing that happened when our villains are discussing it. But I just don't believe that these people would care, you know, that this would make their lives difficult in any way.
Well, okay, I hear your point and I get it. Would it be any different in the sense that they are already kind of under the spotlight with everything that's happening so far, and they're trying to put the lid on this whole thing, and now we've got one more thing going wrong? Like, is that just not register to you, or is it, like, I'm curious, like, is it?
Well, I just, again, who are we casting these guys as? We're casting them as the Illuminati, basically, the huge high-end villains that sit in their smoky tower and, you know, push the chess pieces of the world around. They're not going to care about the murder or the attempted murder of a single person, unless it's like the president or something, you know. I don't buy that they are.
So you don't think that really has any threat of exposure to them?
Well, look at the method in which it was done. They shoot her and leave the murder weapon at the scene. Like, that is the definition of throwing your cock out and slapping on the floor and saying, who cares about what happens? You know, we're acting with impunity if we're going to literally leave the murder weapon there, as opposed to, you know, taking That's it with fair. You and letting it be unsolved.
That's fair. So, okay. I hear your point. Valid.
Yeah. Yeah.
From here, we go to Victor Klemper's greenhouse, and he is in there playing with his orchids. What a man. What a nice man. Scully is intense in this scene. I don't believe one bad thing this guy's done. I don't believe he did it.
It's all fake news. Yep.
She does not back down from this man and speaks very honestly about the horrors he inflicted on innocent Jewish people all throughout this scene. She just lets him have it, and he doesn't really flinch, but Mulder presses him for knowing his father, what is the work, and he hands him the photograph. Klemper evades a little bit, but finally relents just a little when Mulder says what he wants is similar to what Klemper wants, the truth. And Klemper, of course, in this scene, is talking about how he will never be remembered, which, so sorry, dude. Your science is awful.
So sorry, but your horrible acts won't be commemorated.
Yeah, yeah. No one will realize what good I've done for this world.
Yeah, no one will think I am Darth Vader.
Forget the millions of people who died because of me and my friends. The one nugget of information Klemper reveals. He asks if they know the formula of Napier's constant. This photo was taken at Strughold Mining Company, and that's all he tells them. Mm-hmm. I will say, this is the one time we hear about Strughold.
Yes.
And then he comes in the movie. That is Strughold.
I think that was a case of, we need to name this guy something. He'll be the guy who owned the mine. Easy.
Yep. Easy. Yeah. But it's still kind of cool. Oh, it's neat.
And it was a great name. Strughold.
Struggled.
Like a Bond supervillain, if ever there was one.
Yeah, that's very true. Back at the syndicate, they get a call. It's from Victor. He informs well-manicured man that the son of their old colleague just visited. They hang up, and well-manicured man informs the room that Mulder is indeed alive. Uh-oh. It's here they decide to take further action of their own, although what it is a mystery.
I'm surprised they don't just say, we're going to kill that guy who smokes cigarettes because he lied to us. Straight up told us that Mulder was dead, and he's not.
Well, to his credit, he probably really thinks he is dead. Because he was there when they threw the grenade or the satchel bomb in there. I mean, really, how do you dig out of, how do you get out of that? But he did.
Yeah. Just wait 5 months. He'll find a way.
Just wait 5 months. Yep.
That's right.
Back at the hospital, a man paces outside Melissa's room, very suspicious. Albert Hostin comes in to pray over Melissa at the request of Scully, since she cannot be there. A sweet gesture, Andrew. Very sweet. She wants to make sure her sister gets some attention and show that she has some representation. So sweet, Andrew.
And bodyguard, I'm sorry. This is not about prayer. This is about kicking ass.
Correct.
There's a lot we don't know about Albert.
So what is his weapon of choice? Or is it just
prayer beads?
Uplifting words.
I think that he has a little string of prayer beads, and he can garrot somebody with them.
God.
He does the whole neck break thing. That'll do it.
Wow.
Or his hair.
We need to write this. Hair. We need to write this.
We need to write this. We seriously do.
Oh, man. Anyway, so he talks to Mama Scully and tells her that Melissa, unfortunately, is weak. He's not subtle. He's not good at comforting, but
yeah,
he's nothing if not honest.
Of all the doctors, his bedside manner sucks.
He asks if he can pray over her, and just then you see her grab his hand sharply before he starts, and Mama Scully asks sternly, "You mean to Jesus, right? Not a bear?" And the episode ends.
You mean to Jesus, right?
Yeah, I don't need any of this, you know, spirit animals crap. We are a Christian family.
Are you an Indian? Is
And then he just back answered. In rural West Virginia, Andrew, Mulder and Scully pull up at Strughold Mining.
I love the legend on this saying rural West Virginia. Like, that's the address.
That is the address.
So good. And it shows because, like, it's clapboard housing and everything is just looking very old.
Mm-hmm. The warehouse is a staggered, decrepit warehouse built on a cliffside. It looks really cool. I want to know. I didn't look this up. Did you, by chance?
Listen, this was not my episode. This was yours.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. I just know you liked Google's it. It doesn't have to be your episode.
I did not look it up, but I would have liked to, actually. Yeah.
It's as industrial as you can get. I think this is a really cool set piece, and they found a way to use it.
That will use the heck out of it, for sure.
Yeah, the agents enter and eventually find a long hall with large steel doors with red lights. This place is getting some electricity still, somehow. They each try doors one by one. They continue trying the code and eventually gain entrance.
Now, it is noted as a goof.
Yes.
That the code they use is wrong. Not Napier's constant, but
by one digit, I think.
Right, they're missing a one or something in there, so.
Yeah.
But
fair enough, care. But yep. Google just destroys stuff, man.
It sure does. You know, the real problem is Napier's constant is wrong. This episode shows us that number is the real number for Napier's constant.
Whatever, I believe the X-Files.
I sure do.
I believe the X-Files. It's here that Scully takes a moment to plead with her partner to take a moment for himself. Mulder could be learning something awful about his father, and she just knows how it would affect her. So she wants to make sure he's ready. He nods in understanding, and after a quick moment, his hand turns the handle on the door. It opens into Skinner's office. No. No, just a cute cut.
You look
cut.
Left, cigarette pack making machine. You look right, it's a door.
This whole warehouse is the cigarette pack machine. The
cigarette. Yeah, that's exactly where it comes from.
They come in through that side door by Bill Clinton's face. Wait a minute.
How is this even possible? Skinner's like, how'd you nothing on their way up in the car?
Well, no. You got to get to the important part. That's what I've always wondered about TV shows like this.
Yeah.
It's like, do you guys save all the good stuff for your arrival to locations? You've clearly been together for hours at this point, right? So you haven't talked about anything?
West Virginia is not exactly close. It's closer than West Tisbury, but it's not exactly close to Washington.
Yeah.
It was a little bit of a drive.
A little bit.
Yeah. No, well, you never see them going to the bathroom. So to your point, I think they do excise the boring bits for the show.
Absolutely. So CSM arrives at Skinner's office, not Mulder and Scully. Skinner gets up from his desk to meet the man at the door.
You called me.
Yes, I did.
About?
I may have located the digital tape that you're looking for.
You may have located it?
Yes, though there's a great chance it may fall into the hands of people who might use it for purposes not your own.
You want to work a deal? Is that what this is? Let me tell you something. I don't work deals.
I just thought you should know of certain potentialities.
Do you have the tape?
As I said, I may have located it.
Do you have the damn tape?
I'll know more when we next meet.
I do not negotiate. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
I don't think you do. I don't think you understand at all.
No, I'm quite aware of your policies in those regards.
Then I hope your next course of action will be more cautious and informed.
I gotta say, I love this scene because we see CSM cracking under the pressure. He's feeling it right now. He's lied to his colleagues, and they're calling his bluff at this point.
CSM's calling Skinner's bluff at this point too. He's like, are you negotiating with me? This whole scene is so good for that. It's like
so good for a man so normally composed, Andrew. When CSM yells for the tape, we can see that anxiety and fear in his face if he can't produce it the next day.
Yep.
He threatens Skinner one last time before the scene ends.
You know, there's a moment in that threat where I think he's looking at Skinner like, I did not expect this to come from you. You know, I had you pegged as a pencil pusher, and now you're working a deal? You just made my day a little bit more interesting, pal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Skinner has played that center line so well. Mm. He stood up to CSM a couple times, but they're very small.
They didn't mean as much as it does now.
No, this is, to CSM, this is his way to finally remove Mulder and Scully from the board. Mm-hmm. And Skinner is now standing in the way of that. And he's getting very angry about it.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, it's the most we've seen William B. Davis in the whole show.
Yeah. This is just fantastic. So, back at Strughold, the agents come across a large record storage in metal filing cabinets. Medical files. When Mulder hits the lights, they reveal a seemingly endless tunnel of cabinets. Scully notes the records indicate vaccine certificates, smallpox. An old tissue cassette is in there as well. And she can tell because the new ones are plastic. Each file has the same compilation. Mulder asks when she was born, and he gives her a look. They go find her file. She's doubtful, but bang, there it is, Andrew. Her tissue sample, by the way, is plastic. Uh-oh. Just as she described.
Can we take a minute to talk about the production design on this set? Because I don't know how you do that. Like, this is not found. I'm pretty sure. You can't go, you know, you can't do your location scout and say, all right, Jim, we need a location for this scene. It's a mine shaft. So there's going to be like rails down the middle of the hallway. But on either side are thousands of metal filing cabinets. We're shooting Monday. So if you could find that for us by Monday.
You know what? Let me look at that scene one more time. I wonder if it's like the... Not to bring up Aliens again, but I wonder if it's that James Cameron trick where they put a mirror like 10 feet down the way.
I was wondering that too, except I'm looking at it right now.
Of course, yeah, Mulder's standing there, so they can't do that.
They can't do that. And the line of lights that trickle down the hallway, it doesn't reflect. Like it doesn't bounce back the same way.
No. Yeah, so I mean, they probably just found a length of tunnel or created one, you know, illusion. Mm. Just long enough to make it look, and I'm sure by after the third cabinet, it's like cardboard or something. Like
absolutely, yeah.
They started cutting corners at some point.
For a 5-minute scene, they did not lug in 10 million filing cabinets.
Well, actually, Andrew, you're wrong. They're actually all full with actual medical records of the staff.
Chris Carter has this thing for authenticity. It is really impressive. Yeah. But I was blown away by this because they make it look so good in this
particular. It is fantastic. This whole Strughold mining center is fantastic.
Yeah.
Mulder then gets another idea and rushes off in search of another file, his sister's. He notices something strange compared to the other files. Her name is on a label over another. With an ease none of us have experienced removing sticky labels from packages, he takes it off to reveal his name on the original tag. Suddenly, the lights go out. He rushes off to the main warehouse floor. A brilliant white light shines through the countless windows. Scully is left shrouded in darkness, her flashlight beaming into the darkness. And suddenly, dozens of small grayish creatures scurry past her. She can't get a good look at them. And, you know, the lights are off, so she can't be a believer yet.
And nobody brought a camera.
The lights shining near Mulder begin to rise up slowly into the sky as he rushes outside to see a large spacecraft ascend and disappear over the crest of a nearby cliffside. Okay, Andrew.
Yes. Yes, Mike.
We need to talk about this.
I'm ready.
I don't get it. What's with the alien stuff?
Thank you for saying what I'm thinking. Because I thought this was going to be a moment where I come out being the hard one saying, I don't get why this is here and I don't like it. And you'd have been like, oh, Andrew, come on. It's the X-Files. It's so good. It doesn't matter. It's just aliens and spaceships. And my God, look at it. It's so good. But yeah, this is a big fat elephant in the middle of the room of a plot.
It's unneeded.
Why? And it's brilliant to look at. Everything about this sequence is great. And then we're going to get into a gunfight. So, like, that's great too. But just They happened to be here when an alien spaceship decided to take a little tour, and then little alien kids are running by, what, to get a pickup? I mean...
Pretty much. I don't know if they're trying to give us the... You know, when you watch the movie, how when he injects the cure into Scully's chamber, that the whole ship is affected. I don't know if they're trying to send the message here that someone shouldn't be here right now. We have to abort mission right now or something. But while the spaceship aspect is cool, they don't need the aliens. I don't understand that.
No, well, the first problem is that this comes out of nowhere. It's like,
absolutely,
we're doing this mystery, and then suddenly there's a spaceship and little baby aliens, you know, little kids in alien suits, which is a great touch. It makes it look quite otherworldly, but there is no setup for this moment. There is no, you know, Air Force general saying, yeah, we've got disturbance in the force over rural West Virginia. Send your blue beret guys in. You know, it just suddenly there's a spaceship, and it feels like a movie element where it's like suddenly you need a big reveal to keep your audience interested.
I argue that they did not need this.
Absolutely.
I will say this one hurts the episode.
Yeah.
Not awfully, but it's just like, what? When you're watching
I'm okay even with the sudden appearance of men with guns, because I get the idea like, they opened up the chambers, an alert sounded, everybody got off their butts and went down to investigate. But the ship out of nowhere, I got it in uppercase caps. It's like, why is this here?
Yeah.
Other than it's cool, you know, it's fancy.
Big old Tim Taylor right there.
Yep. Well, where else are you going to put it in the episode? It doesn't really, doesn't lend itself anywhere other than here, but for what reason?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I know that this is, again, let's come back to the year. This is 1995. This show's been on for 2 years now, and everyone wants to see a fucking alien. That's what the show's about, right? That's how they sell it.
Yeah.
So Chris Carter is probably under the pressure of, okay, I got to show something at key moments.
Yeah, maybe.
Because people are losing their patience.
Well, but that's an interesting point. So do you think that this is pressure from Fox that they got to have a UFO?
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not going to say that is for sure what happened, but I don't see any other reason to have it, because it makes no difference. It's something for Mulder to see, but he's already a believer, so we don't need him to see it.
Well, you know, the other big sin of this moment, it never comes up.
Like, it has nothing.
There's not even a moment where they get to say, hey, Scully, do you know what I saw when I went?
Yeah, they don't even bring it up. It's like,
yeah,
the one time Mulder has a paranormal experience he doesn't tell Scully.
Yeah.
It's because it's not important. I think they knew that.
Well, and like, she doesn't bring up the fact that she was almost ran over by little
aliens. Accosted by a bunch of little aliens. Like, what the fuck is happening?
Let's just agree never to talk about it. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
a weird scene.
Yeah.
They could have cut that as cool as the lights look coming through those windows. Not important enough.
Well, like I say, it's beautiful. It's so well done. Yeah. It just has no reason for being there.
Yeah. I completely agree with you, Andrew.
Well, the audience is probably breathing a sigh of relief that we see eye to eye on something.
Red letter day, audience.
Sure is.
We agree.
All right. Well, and the
so, fact yeah. that
there's an ensuing... Have we covered... Did you go into the ensuing gunfight? Did you have notes
on No, that? I was just about to brush past it because it's really not important. The cavalry arrives and they unload from this train of black sedans and SUVs, got their guns ready. Of course, they spot Mulder immediately, begin opening fire. He runs back, he grabs Scully, and they find an exit out the back door.
It's not just any exit. It's the exit she was able to spot because of her encounter with the third kind. Yep. And they run down and make an exit that way.
Surely the bad guys aren't aware of this exit.
No, they don't have any. This is a different group. They have no preordained knowledge of this facility. Although I guess they did have the code to get in. So that's not good. Yeah, it doesn't make sense either.
Oh, God damn it.
You think they would
have covered the seed's just collapsing in on itself. Oh, good.
All right, let's keep on going.
So the next day, Skinner arrives at Charlotte's Diner, a teeny place in the middle of nowhere. He enters to find the agent sitting at a small table, tells them he may be able to negotiate to get them reinstated. The agents initially refuse, telling him of the countless records they found locked in a mountain vault. While they're not entirely certain what they're for, the answers have to be on the digital tape. This is a great scene, with Scully finally deciding to make the deal. She raises wonderful points about their situation and Mulder. They are working so far out of the law, they're actually being pursued, and their access is gone. Perhaps the most important thing to the X-Files, right? Their badges give them some access to things that you normally wouldn't have. And if they truly want answers, they're going to have to make the deal.
Yep.
If they want to be afforded the time to find answers, I should say.
Well, another important point that's raised at this level is that you can't copy the tape. You can't print off of the tape. The plot has carefully locked in this data to the tape.
Nope, CSM used letters and numbers, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
That is uncrackable.
Yeah.
And one
special character. There's no way you could like take a picture of the monitor. That's just beyond people. That's a lot of film. You can't do that.
Can't waste it. He's going to spend a week at Kodak getting that fucking developed.
Yeah.
Plus, you got to worry about the glare.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah. So Mulder, while very resistant to this idea, eventually relents and lets Scully have the final say. He realizes she needs to see her sister.
Yeah, that's probably the most important point that I'm glad that they spent some time on.
She is the one who makes this decision, and as much as it bothers him because he's so determined, he's Mr. Determined, he wants to offer this to his partner because he knows she needs it.
Yep.
So that's good for Mulder. He's learning a little bit in this moment.
He's allowed to be a human every once in a while.
Outside, he offers his condolences to her for her sister. Back at the hospital, we get another monologue from Hosteen. After a day, the white buffalo would no longer drink his mother's milk. The mother would lie down and not get back up. She died.
Uh-oh.
For something to live, another must die.
I gotta realize.
And that is his fear for Melissa. Oh, boy. Skinner walks into the hospital room. He introduces himself to Mama and Hosteen. Before the conversation can get too deep, they notice the curious man again walking past the doorway. Hosteen throws him under the bus immediately and says he's been very interested in this room. Skinner orders them to stay put, and he pursues the man into a stairwell. He approaches the door and hesitates. Before he can open it, it slams open into his face, and he's assaulted by the man with the gun. It's the curious man, and then in comes Louise Cardinal and Krycek, of course, from two different angles. They have ambushed him. He is in no shape. They assault him. Krycek reaches into his jacket and grabs the digital tape, and they all flee.
You know who wouldn't have gotten ambushed in this situation, Mike?
Albert Hosteen.
Well, Albert Hosteen would have sent these guys packing. He would have given them new assholes.
Well, yeah, he would have approached the door and his sense would have just told him there's danger on that side. And then he would have done a roundhouse kick to get. Well, no. He'd back away from the door a little bit. He'd do a roundhouse kick because he knew Louise Cardinal was coming from above.
Yeah.
And then on the return, he would also get Krycek. So it would be one kick and Krycek would be sent down the stairs. And then he would get the drop on the guy behind the door.
The scene writes itself. Knowing Albert Hosteen's power would approach him one at a time. And
absolutely.
In true martial arts movie fashion, he would send them packing multiple times.
Yes.
But no.
Not a bead of sweat on his brow.
And he would have delivered another good rejoinder at the end. He would have been like,
oh, we need something here. We can't leave the audience hanging.
Oh, it's going to be good when we find it. I tell you. Great spirit sent you packing. No.
That's not... Oh, boy. These boots weren't made for walking.
These boots were made for kicking ass.
These boots were made for walking on your face.
Yeah. Okay. Needs work.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. We need to do better. We'll do better, ladies and gentlemen.
We'll do better. Promise. That said, it's a cool fight scene because I like how it sort of demonstrates each of their skills. The curious man is good at making distractions. Luis Cardinal is a fucking snake who comes in from behind with a garrote.
Yep.
And then Krychek's the finisher. He runs in there and is like, I don't fucking care business with a few hand slaps. Bap, bap, bap.
Yeah. It's a kind of a scary scene because you see them all descend. They were all waiting for him. And it was a deliberate sting operation that they inflicted on Skinner. So this was definitely planned.
They knew that they just had to make themselves obvious to a point that somebody, would come and investigate. It just happened that he happened to have the digital tape on him. Whoops.
Yep.
He should have given it to Albert and then gone out to investigate.
Well, the safest place for this tape is in Albert's hands.
As we know, he can friggin' protect that tape. And maybe that's the opportunity for him to actually read it and do all the stuff that Skinner says he's going to do later.
Yeah, absolutely. After the commercial, the hitmen arrive at a convenience store. The curious man goes inside, and Luis hangs back for a moment and asks Krychek if he wants anything before he gets out. Krychek says no and sits in his thoughts for a moment as Luis goes to the store. The camera lingers on Krychek, and he glances back at the store. Wow. Luis is being very considerate. This is unusual.
Yeah.
As he glances at Luis, he notices him and the curious man look over at Krychek in the car. His spidey sense goes off. He gets nervous. He notices then that the car clock is flashing 12 o'clock instead of displaying the time. He immediately jumps out of the car, bolts across the street as the car explodes behind him. Knocked to the ground. And anyone on the Facebook page would know that that is a sexy-ass scene, literally. He gets knocked to the ground and runs off while his ex-partners watch through the flames at a fumbled hit job.
Yep.
This was awesome because we can infer from this, obviously, that the attempted murder is CSM's doing. He's angry at Krychek for fucking up and killing Scully's sister, causing him all this trouble. So what does he do? He sends them on another mission to get this tape still. And then when it's complete, they're going to have him killed because he messed up. It's just like the ultimate backstab, right?
There's no making up. There's like, no, I'm going to carry this one. I'm going to carry this torch of my hate for you into future missions. No matter how well you succeed, eventually your usefulness will be over. It's very, very dark. Apparently, this stunt scene was particularly difficult. They were having real trouble making the pyrotechnics work. And I think they may have done it a few times with him running out of the car and it didn't blow. So, like, he's
tell you what, I would not be getting in that car if they were having trouble with it. Be like, you get one take at this.
That's right. After this, it's all CGI. But no, I think he was legitimately nervous when he had to do it for the fourth time. It's like, okay, we got the blow up this time. So you're going to get up and run away again. No worries. You're safe.
It's not going to go off while you're in it. Don't worry.
But apparently he was a little bit close when it blew up and he could feel the concussion behind him. It comes through quite well on the on the stunt. I think it's one of the better ones they have.
Very good stuff. And that tracking shot as he's running across the street.
Oh, there's a lot of work involved in that scene.
Brilliant. A lot of high octane stuff. It's just really cool that the rising strings as he notices the clock and bolts out the door. It's fantastic.
You know when that car is driving up to the grocery store or the whatever they're going for the beers or whatever. It's such an old model car. There's a voice in my head going, used a $400 used car to blow up. Yep. This car is not going to be long for this world.
Nope. That's such a good shot. Watching it again.
It's very good.
CSM is under a lot of pressure. We know this. It's been two episodes now, almost a complete three. And he deserves this one, right? Mm-hmm. It's so cool to see him taking another action that's vindictive, and it kind of shows us a little bit more of who he is and the way he runs his operations. He's got his hitmen, but if they fuck up, he's going to bring the hammer down, or at least try.
it's characteristic of him, isn't it, though? Because he's very much impulsive and just shut down the problem immediately. Whereas there could have been a more nuanced solution here. Could have been they kill him not in a huge fireball of a car bomb and leave his body with suitable fingerprints so that they could link him to the murder of Melissa and then close that loop. As it is, trying to kill him this way, that loop is still open. You know, that will always be investigatable as opposed to giving them a convenient patsy.
Yeah. So Mulder and Scully now arrive back at Klemper's greenhouse, only to find the well-manicured man in his place.
Hello again, young lady.
Where's Victor Klemper?
Oh, poor Klemper. They found him yesterday here among his flowers. Apparently his heart had given out.
You killed him, didn't you? You're one of the men in this photo. You knew my father.
Yes, since we were young men.
You were involved in this project. You know why the medical data was being collected.
Yes, I do indeed. In 1947, a spacecraft was reportedly recovered in New Mexico. No doubt you know of this, and of the reported recovery of a body at the site. These incidents coincided with not only the end of World War II, but an ignominious project which brought Nazi scientists and war criminals to this country to exploit their knowledge.
Operation Paperclip.
Yes, you know of it already. And you must also know of the work of Dr. Joseph Mengele, the Nazi angel of death.
Mengele thought that he could produce a super race through genetic engineering.
As did many of his colleagues at the Institute of Hereditary Biology and Racial Hygiene.
Like Victor Klemper?
Well, Victor, he loved his orchids. Did you know that he was able to create some of the most beautiful hybrids?
Klemper was trying to create an alien-human hybrid. That's what I saw in the boxcar. He was using human test subjects.
Mulder, wait.
My father was involved in this?
The technology wasn't there, Mulder. DNA wasn't even identified until 1944. This is all a lie.
When your father realized what the medical data was being used for, he objected strenuously.
He collected those files?
With the threat of nuclear holocaust in the 1950s, the government instructed men like your father to gather genetic data on the general populace for the purposes of post-apocalyptic identification.
The vaccination records. They took tissue from everyone who received a smallpox inoculation.
Hundreds of millions of Americans.
So that Victor Klemper had access to a DNA database of nearly everyone who was born since 1950.
Mulder, this man is telling you everything that you want to hear. But it's a fabrication. It is pure science fiction. There were no experiments with aliens.
Why would I lie to you?
Like you said before, to protect yourself and the continuation of the Nazi agenda. Human tests.
Why was your file there, Scully?
I don't know.
There were current records on file.
Yes, but records of what, Mulder?
Of abductions! Of abductees! They took my sister. Why?
They took her as insurance because your father threatened to expose the project.
Why her? Why not me?
It's not for me to say. But your life is in danger now, too. You also threatened to expose the project. You have become your father.
Why are you telling me this?
It's what you want to know, isn't it?
Is there more?
More than you'll ever know.
Huge info dump. What a scene. I mean, we learned so much, but is it real? I wanted to ask you, Andrew, since you're the skeptical one, yes. Is it real? Can you believe everything he's saying?
Well, the question, the counter question would be, why is he telling Mulder and Scully about this? And as much as I was impressed in the last episode with the funeral side conversation between the well-manicured man and Scully, and she comes out and says, why are you helping me? They don't do it here, which is, I think, a missed opportunity, because it could have been an opportunity for him to, again, show an element of, it helps me to help you in this case. But yeah, there is no really good reason why he dumps this information, why he's even here. You know, he clearly has a motivation to tell them enough so that they will continue to be involved. If you wanted to give the plot a little bit more intelligence than I think it deserves, I would say that maybe he knows that by keeping Mulder and Scully on the board and in play, it's a check to the cigarette smoking man. Like
a little bit, yeah.
CSM will be pursuing them, and then this is somehow a way he will have an advantage. Like, I think that the members of the syndicate do plot against each other. So at the very basic level, I think that could be a reason.
That's very much so a possibility.
But I don't think him telling them the motives and the reason behind the consortium doing what they do actually is necessary for this. Like, I think he could do this all from the shadows. I don't see why they involve him here, other than it's a cool showdown moment and it gives the audience a little bit of service, but
they had to get rid of Victor in some way. So,
have him there, have his dead body be there for them to discover and be like, oh, they got to him.
Yeah.
As opposed to having him being dead off stage.
In a weird way, I want to say he's still acting on the fact that their consortium, as you say, is coming under undue attention, or the threat is there. And by telling them this, it would get them where they need to be faster to get this over with, because the digital tape is still hanging out there, you know? Yeah. So he wants to get them just back on course so we can move past this and get all this craziness to stop. And yeah, I do think there is an element of sticking it into CSM.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just looking at the scene again, and it doesn't, because we got Scully sitting here saying, you know, being the angel on Mulder's shoulder saying, this is all a lie. He's fabricating it. It's science fiction. Don't believe him. And, you know, he says, why would I lie to you? And he's like, to protect myself. That's what he says for.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's what leads me to that thought of this is protection. This is by helping them here, the immediate threat to their group is mitigated somehow.
Well, okay. To their credit, I'm looking at the transcript to get the exact lines here. And at the end, Mulder does say, why are you telling me this? So, you know, I do like these moments where the plot tries to predict what the viewer is thinking. And we're thinking, why are you telling me this? But he doesn't get an answer. Well, man says it's what you want to know, isn't it? So it's like, I'm going to arm you with this intelligence to sort of motivate you. I think the only reason I could come up with would be that he knows it's going to be a foil to the cigarette smoking man. That's all.
Yeah. Fair enough, man. So back at the syndicate, a call comes in for CSM. It's none other than Krycek, someone he was really hoping not to hear from. He plays the phone call off as positive in front of his colleagues, while Krycek is on the other end plotting his revenge and threatening that if he ever comes looking for him, he will use the digital tape and make him a very famous man.
Yeah.
Boom.
That's one of my favorite scenes, actually. It's the counterpoint between how Krycek, his anger and the joy that you have on CSM's face when he's hearing this and totally misrepresenting it to the syndicate.
Yeah. Really? Ah, everything's gone well.
This is my man right here telling me how great things are. Do you guys want to talk to him?
Sorry. The call dropped.
Oh, crazy.
Damn.
He must have hung up.
Mulder then creeps in on his mom's Betty by time. He demands she give him answers to his questions at 2 a.m. He's very considerate, Mulder.
Note that he, again, took a 9-hour car ride to get to Martha's Vineyard. Right. Just to get up to ask a few questions.
He wants to know if his father made her make a choice. When she finally relents, she says she could not choose. It was his choice, and she's hated him ever since. She breaks down in tears as he holds her. I'm sorry, Mulder. You got to slow the fuck down. Let your mom sleep.
I'm sorry, I'm wrong. It's not West Tisbury. I guess she...
This one's Connecticut.
Greenwich, Connecticut. But that's still not close.
Right.
I am almost curious to Google the directions now.
Oh, boy.
I'm not going to.
Well, I'll continue then, sir, while you Google.
You know what? It's going to be arguably gross. It's going to be another 7-hour car ride or something. All right.
Right. We now go to Skinner's office. The moment we've all been waiting for, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, the showdown.
CSM arrives and lights one up. They continue their old conversation, and CSM reiterates he doesn't make deals, especially with punks who think they can bluff him. Because of Krychek, he knows Skinner has no tape. Mm-hmm. He threatens Skinner in a cryptic way, offering different ways he could die. As he goes to leave, Skinner stops him a moment and then heads to the other door. When he opens it, he summons in Albert Hosteen. And this is where Skinner unzips and flops his gigantic manhood onto the desk, I would say.
Yeah.
He tells CSM that Hosteen has read all the information in the files, and if Mulder and Scully so much as come down with a case of the flu, he's ready to recite chapter and verse everything that's on the tape. This is so good.
It's a wonderful scene. I'm not sure if I believe it, but it's a wonderful scene.
Well, I mean, that's the whole idea behind a bluff, right?
It is.
Could it be true? Could it not be true? Poker face, sir.
I don't think it's true. But I think the CSM cannot take the chance that it is true.
He can't.
Is the upshot.
He can't, because he would have to commit genocide very publicly. And there's really no way to get around that.
I would love to see Skinner, the cigarette-smoking man, the well-manicured man, and the first elder at a poker game. I think that they would be pretty interesting to watch.
Oh, yeah. You're bluffing. No, you're bluffing.
No, you're bluffing.
I believe you. So CSM leaves defeated for now. It was such a good scene.
It was. It really was. I mean, and the smoke, you know, just pouring out of the cigarette smoking man and that. It just so, it was typical for him, but it just sets the scene very nicely.
Yeah. Mulder arrives at the hospital to find Scully sitting in Melissa's room, an empty bed. He comforts his partner as she sobs. With newfound dedication, Mulder is convinced the truth is in the X-Files. Scully says, she's heard the truth. Now what she wants are the answers. He puts an arm around his partner and hugs her. Credits.
You know what? They do that every once in a while. Eh? They throw a spin on the tagline of the truth is out there to more or less success. This is one of the better examples. You know, I know the truth. Now I want the answers is good. Mm-hmm. Although you could spin it on its head and say, I have the answers. Now I want the truth. You know, just how you inflect the line. But no, that's a good one in this case.
Andrew, regale me with your final thoughts on this episode.
Why, yes, Mike, I shall. It's almost like I have them written down ahead of time. So, no. Mike, there's a lot to like in this episode. If the show is about space aliens and government conspiracies, then you get all of it in spades in this one show. It's the first money shot of a full-fledged alien spaceship, and as far as pushing the narrative of the mythology arc along, it gets a pretty damn solid boost right here. If I have any complaints, and I suppose it's my role in our little show that I must, it's the reveal of the alien spaceship and the appearance of the little people, to which we agree. This comes out of absolutely nowhere for no apparent reason at exactly the time Mulder and Scully come to visit the Strughold Mine in rural West Virginia. Very cool scene, well-produced, awe-inspiring, but makes zero sense in the context of the overall story and has zero repercussions as well. After it's all done, we don't even have a moment of Mulder saying to Scully, hey, you'll never guess what I saw when I was out there at that mine. Though I suppose it can be hand-waved away as they were both in their own dark clouds of grief, having lost a record number of family members in a short amount of time. So, to summarize, this was one of those episodes where I think they had a checklist of things they wanted to happen, and they built a plot around them to facilitate this. But from a high enough vantage point, you can see that things don't really link together very well.
Yeah, that is unfortunate. It's the bad part of the episode, but it's just whatever. Like, the rest of the episode is pretty fucking good.
Yeah. And the worst part is, it's not like I didn't like watching it. It was cool. Right. It was fun.
It just doesn't make sense.
Just like,
enough. Like, yeah.
You know, afterwards, you're like, I enjoyed eating those 22 candy bars, but I feel a little gross afterwards.
I feel gross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my poop is green, but otherwise, you know, it was great. Mike, what are your final thoughts?
I think we've shown an acceptable level of excitement and jubilation throughout this episode. And even, I would say, the three-parter. It's a great addition to the three-parter. And yep. I don't have much to say that's different from what we've already talked about. So I'm just going to say that one thing I really did enjoy was, and I mentioned this in space of all episodes, right?
Yeah.
But I do like when they tie certain things in history to the show, right? Mm-hmm. I like when they try to inject themselves into history because it just makes it more interesting.
Yep.
It gives it a sense of reality, which is appreciated for me. And of course, World War II is very broad and very, you know, everyone does that for movies and TV. But it helps this show, it helps this mythology in a very special way, a very interesting way. They develop on this stuff and move it forward throughout the years, and it's exciting. So when they brought Victor Klemper in and gave us his backstory and all that stuff, it was disturbing and cool, and it's frightening to think that, oh my God, Mulder's dad was working with him. It's interesting.
Well, and the appropriate level of righteous anger,
right,
as voiced by Scully. But I would argue that if you're going to go there, are you not obliged to sort of lean further into that narrative by saying this guy doesn't really deserve the privilege that he has? I understand he did something for us, but he's still a villain, which is why he is ultimately disposable within a scene of having seen him. You know, he makes a call and he knows he's out, you know, and he's like, my old friend, I had a visit, and I just thought I'd tell them that you're a venal fool, but I didn't tell them anything else. I'll be expecting your hitman in about 30 minutes.
Yeah, he kind of resigns his life in that moment, which is interesting. Because if he didn't make that phone call, he wouldn't be dead necessarily.
Well, maybe he's not dead. Maybe that's just a lie that the well-manicured man told. So that
he's totally dead. That guy's totally dead.
Yeah. He's not coming back for a sequel.
Yeah. No. But yeah, great episode, and I do want to ask you, Andrew, at this point, just for the hell of it, give us your number one of the trilogy.
Without a doubt, Anasazi.
Boom! All right.
Mm.
And why is that? That's interesting.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it, and you thought I was going to say Blessing Way, and in a way, I thought I was going to say Blessing Way. But
it's hard not to.
Yeah. For me, the subplot of Mulder being poisoned with the water supply, it was just so cunning, and it made me think pretty deeply about what was the sort of ulterior motive behind that, and when it was done too, right? It wasn't he got the documents and then he was poisoned. It was, no, they decided to make him crazy just because they decided to flip a switch on him. And just the fallout for that. I thought that was really very cool, leading to a great cliffhanger. Blessing Way is good, but then it takes this sort of snoozer turn of, you know, we've got to rehabilitate Mulder with the Navajo ritual. Scully's got to have her hypno-regression therapy, which doesn't do anything. You know, there's enough stuff in there that I wasn't as keen on that it's like, okay, you know, there's some good moments in here, but really not as great. And then Paperclip got some good moments, but there's just enough in there. I was like, oh, come on, you know? So between the three of them, I think Anasazi is probably the best, probably because it sets it all up. You know, it begins the questions and you're like, I don't know where this is going. It's just so cool. Mm-hmm. The others are good and they resolve it, but there's a little ham-handedness in it to happen. Anyway, that's my take.
Fair enough.
What is yours?
If I put to the question right now, I would say I would go Blessing Way.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's a weird choice. I get that because it is slower and it is a little more methodical and you get Mulder's spiritual journey or whatever, which could be boring to a lot of people, but
yeah,
I think overall it still moves pretty well. And with the amount of stuff that Scully does in this episode, we get to see her really take off and handle this episode by herself. It's hard exciting not for
to like a Scully episode for sure.
Yeah. And then the ramping up, that constant ramping up of tension is so good. And it builds to that climax. That's it's hard to overlook.
It's true.
Now, is it for sure the best one? I don't know, but that's where I'm sitting right now. It's hard for me not to pick Paperclip simply for the big dick moment of Skinner. Yeah, that's a good at one. The end. Yeah. But I would right now I would go with Blessing Way.
Okay. Well, I think we have covered it pretty darn well.
Yeah. Well, Andrew, the next time we do this, my wettest of dreams will be coming true, and we will be covering DPO and Clyde Bruckman.
That the tone in your voice, so valued viewers and lovely listeners, we had a session a while back where we divvied up the hosting duties for each of the show. I don't think we'll surprise you by saying that one of us leads the show and the other is just sort of color commentary. And we got to the third and fourth episodes, which are DPO and Clyde Bruckman. And there was a moment, I think, where Mike was legitimately like, oh, you mean I can't do them both? Because we knew Clyde was going to be, you know, since the show was decided that we were going to do this, he was like, oh, I'm totally doing Clyde Bruckman because it's my favorite episode ever. But you've said such good things about DPO. I think you're like, oh, wait a second.
There was a hint, a glimmer of hope I could do both, but I would not do that to you and take both the great episodes. So you, sir, obviously are welcome to it.
Yeah.
I felt bad for stealing Clyde Bruckman. I know. I'm sure you like that episode too.
I think you will give it the treatment that it deserves.
I hope so. That is the episode, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for listening. And Andrew, if you would like to say goodbye, please do so.
Ladies and gentlemen, the proper operation of a paperclip is to take it and put it in the top left corner, adhering 6 to 7 pieces of paper in a solid mass so that they don't fall over, and it avoids the pain of using a staple. So
6 to 7?
Yeah, when you use it on more or less, it gets clunky, but the ideal number is 6 to 7. So use your paperclips wisely. You heard it here first.
You heard it here first. No more tens, because that's just too much. Then you get like the spread apart paperclip. It's too much work. Again.
Nope. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you liked what you heard, please rate and review on your podcast app of choice. Andrew and I would be eternally grateful to you fine, fine people for helping us expand and get the word out. Also, we've got a killer group on Facebook. Feel free to join in on the discussion at facebook.com/groups/thisisnothappeningpod and become an official member of the syndicate. We do polls and we have questions for every episode to give you guys the opportunity to chime in and possibly let your voice be heard on our recordings. And please join us on our new Twitter at TINHXFilesPod, no dash, to stay up to date on everything moment to moment. Thank you, and remember, don't stop swimming.